to Yellow Bee Pod, your podcast all about highlighting the stories of East and Southeast Asian diaspora. My name is Natalie Chung. I host this podcast and I'm British born Chinese. One day when I figure out what I actually want to say in my intro, I'm just going to record it once and then use the same intro in every episode, but I just haven't fully decided of what I actually want to say. And how's my audio, by the way? I feel like my audio is a bit weird today. I don't know really what I'm doing with this microphone, but if you do have any recommendations, I would gladly hear them because I'm not an expert at recording and editing podcasts, so hit me up if you have any tips. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of things which have happened this year, focusing on lockdown, quarantine, isolation, whatever you want to call it. And it's a bit crazy because we're going into, it's been at least 5 months now since the UK has been in some sort of lockdown, and it'll probably continue at least until the end of the year, into 2021, and maybe until it's been a full 12 months and beyond. I'm going to be talking about some of what I've been doing this lockdown, aside from starting this podcast. An update on the COVID-19 related racism cases that I spoke about back in episode 4, which feels like months ago now. Well, it was months ago, but it feels like forever ago, and a lot has happened since then. And also talking about and the things that I've learned from lockdown that I want to keep moving forwards. As always, I am super glad to speak to listeners and hear from you. So you can get in touch at yellowbeepod on Instagram and Twitter. And you can also email me, yellowbeepod@gmail.com. I love the long emails that I receive from people. It's really, really great to know who's on the other side listening to this podcast. I also love reading reviews, which is amazing. I've got a couple reviews that I want to read to you today, which are on Apple Podcasts. So thank you so much to listeners who have left a review. It means a lot. Plus, it helps people find this podcast when they go searching for British Asian content or whatever they're looking for. One review says, I would really recommend Yellow Bee Pod. There's such a variety of topics/guests that there's an episode for everyone. I also enjoyed listening and learning about the East and Southeast Asian experience in the UK as a South Asian and found it really informative. There's also lots of funny moments too. I'm glad that some people find it funny and it's not just me laughing to myself sometimes. But thank you so much for that amazing review. The username is RK followed by 7Ds. Rickadit? I don't know. Another review from a listener who says, I love Natalie's style of hosting and how she engages with her audience. My favourite part of her podcast is the beginning where she directly talks to her listeners about her ideas about certain topics. I find that very unique and different to a lot of podcasts that I have listened to in the past, and I think this makes it more intimate. I've also learned a lot just by listening to the interviews she conducts with different people from various cultural backgrounds and professional industries. That's amazing. What a sweet review. That's really kind of you to say. It seems like quite a few of us are learning a lot. I'm certainly learning a lot from speaking to guests and all this time that I'm spending thinking about my ethnic identity. It's way more time that I've spent thinking about these sort of cultural topics than I ever have before. And I really, really appreciate having you guys to share it with. I'm glad that this listener enjoys the pre-ramble that I give, so like the first segment of the podcast before I get into chatting with a guest in most of the episodes, because sometimes I feel like, am I going on too long? Do people want to hear from me, or do they just want me to skip to the guest interview? But there's always things to update you on and always things that I want to share that I think you would enjoy or appreciate or learn from or like or whatever. So I do like that segment. And actually this episode is going to be a solo episode, so no guest, just me talking about my lockdown experiences. Thank you so much for that review. I'm going to read one more, a short one. Kimberly. Thanks, Kimberly. Kimberly says, love this podcast. Perfect chat. Great information and funny too. And she put a little yellow heart and a little bee emoji, my favourite. I am a big fan of those emojis now. I don't think any other emojis can compare since I've started this podcast, except for maybe the microphone emoji, like the podcast mic emoji. I'm using that a lot. Did you see Kanye West tweeting the other day? He was tweeting about underused emojis, and he was like, when was the last time that someone used this emoji? There was an oyster, I think there was a flower emoji, and a man in like a beef eater hat. And he said that these emojis get lonely, so maybe we need to start using some of the more obscure underused emojis. And Apple is putting out new emojis all the time, so yeah, let's think about it. And I hope Kanye West is okay. I really do. And back on topic, I would really, really appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. Even if you don't use an Apple device to listen to podcasts, or you don't have Apple Podcasts on your phone, if you have an iTunes account, you can leave a review, whether that's on your computer or an Apple device. I'm going to try out this link, which should direct you directly, if that makes sense, to leave a podcast review for Yellow Bee Pod. If you go on ratethispodcast.com/yellowbeepod. Again, that's ratethispodcast.com/yellowbeepod. It apparently automatically figures out what apps you have on your phone, or that, okay, that sounds kind of creepy, but it figures out where you can leave a review based on the device that you have. And it's not just Apple Podcasts that you can leave a review on, but you can also leave a review on a website called Podchaser. Apparently you can leave a comment on Castbox if you have that on your phone, if you use that. So even if you've already left a review on Apple Podcasts, please consider going to that link, ratethispodcast.com/yellowbeepod, and finding out where you can subscribe, write a review, leave a comment, something positive please. I would absolutely love that, really, really, really appreciate that. Just give it a go and let me know what it looks like on your device, because I tested it out on mine and it all worked really well, and I actually didn't even know that you could leave comments on Castbox, even though that's what I use to listen to podcasts at the moment. And it's also a direct link to subscribe. So if you haven't already subscribed, open up your app right now and click the subscribe button, or click follow, or whatever it is. You can also take a screenshot and share it to your Instagram story to let people know that you're listening to this podcast, and tag me at yellowbeepod so I can see it and reshare it on your story as well. If I miss your message, DM me, because it might be that I can't view your story if you don't have a public account, but I will follow you so I can screenshot it or share it. So take a screenshot, share it on your story, let people know that you're listening to this podcast, or on Spotify you can share it directly to your story so it has a direct link from Instagram to Spotify. Love that! Okay, I feel like I'm figuring out some of the podcasting stuff now, finally, after 16 episodes. Hopefully this is working out. Okay, lockdown, let's talk about it. COVID-19, I remember hearing about it way back in January, and who would have thought right now in August that this would be our lives. And I was really trying to go through this episode without saying the words new normal or unprecedented times, but there you go. So I'm not going to bore you with the details. If you're listening to this, you've lived through the last couple of months, so you know the situation in your area, in your region, in your country. But in terms of what's happening now, I feel like people were treating it very, very differently. So I'm talking about it as if lockdown is over, but of course lockdown isn't really over. The virus is still there, and we still need to socially distance and wear masks and wash our hands and be careful. In particular, it's not over for people who are shielding, or they were shielding, or, you know, for any reason they're particularly vulnerable. Of course, for them, I think it's important to remember that, because sometimes from Instagram it can seem like everyone's out and about, but of course not everyone is. Some people are still isolating for their own health or to protect someone else. And yeah, definitely on Instagram, I've seen people like over the last month, like at house parties. I swear loads of people in Ibiza and Mykonos right now partying out, or some other Spanish or Greek island. I'm not really clear like what the travel rules are, because actually here in the UK they added France, Netherlands and Malta and some other countries to their quarantine list, which means you have to quarantine for 14 days when you come back from those countries. And they always announce these things really, really, really suddenly. I have decided to cancel my trip, which I had booked way before lockdown started. So I was supposed to be going to Zambia next month. Unfortunately, with everything going on, I've decided to cancel / postpone that trip, which is a bit heartbreaking because we were really looking forward to going back. But my friend had requested a refund, or rather a travel voucher, for her flights like a couple of months back, but I was still holding out thinking that it could still happen, especially because they have far fewer cases in Zambia than we do here in the UK. And also I thought if they cancelled the flights, then I would be able to get my money back. And they did cancel one of my flights, but they rebooked me on another one. I don't really get it, but point is I can't get all my money back, so I'm going for a travel voucher, which is really just delaying the decision because I don't think I'm gonna want to travel on that airline anywhere in particular. I just don't foresee any long distance holidays in the next year or so. Yeah, that's the update on my plans. But how about you? Have you been away? Maybe a staycation, or have you been abroad? Have you been stuck abroad? Have you had your plans cut short? Have you optimistically booked a holiday even though we're still in social distancing, the lockdown times? Let me know, because I'm really trying to get an idea of what's going on. But again, on Instagram, it seems like, yeah, everyone's out on holiday, or they're going to house parties or bars, and definitely not social distancing, which I'm not judging them for, because I haven't been 100% sticking to lockdown rules either. But I actually only just realised today that we're actually still supposed to be social distancing. So the rules in England at the moment is that you are supposed to keep 1 meter, quote, plus, so at least 1 meter away from everyone. I don't know if many of us are really doing that, because even in the street, in the shops, restaurants and stuff, I don't keep 1 meter away from people. Plus, I've been meeting up with friends, and over like a couple of hours you just start walking a bit closer together and not really keeping, you know, 2 meters apart if you can, or 1 meter at the least. How about you? Have you been meeting up with friends or your family, or going into the workplace? I went back into my office this week. So my office in central London, I hadn't been there for 5 months, which is nuts to think about. And we had a bit of a sit down meeting with my team, brainstorming and planning for the rest of the year. And it was really, really, really weird. Firstly, I was getting on public transport, not for the first time, but, you know, wearing a mask, going into London. It wasn't busy on the public transport, on the trains and tube that I went on. And there wasn't loads of people out and about in the city of London, even though, I guess it wasn't peak times though, like we didn't travel in during the peak 9 to 5 normal commuting hours. And it was really weird because I felt like I was starting a new job. You know, when you start a new job and you prepare like extra, you know, lay out your outfit the night before, and you like make sure you have everything sorted, and on the morning you wake up, you make sure you have a proper breakfast, and then when you go in, it's all, what's it gonna be like, what my colleagues gonna be like. And that's exactly how I felt going into the office. And I'm really, really grateful that I've been able to work from home, and I'm going to continue to work from home, and I'm grateful to have a job actually. I mean, super grateful for that, and I need to remind myself of that I am sort of lucky, if that's the right word, to still be employed and earning my normal income, like no pay cuts, no signs of redundancies yet, although I don't want to speak too soon. And I feel positive about my team, like the meeting that we had, it was good, and it was nice to be back in London and some sense of normality. Aside from that, I have been going to restaurants. I've been sort of quite a few times now, like 10 times, although I haven't used the government's Eat Out to Help Out thing. So the Eat Out to Help Out, which is effectively like Monday to Wednesday at certain restaurants, it seems like most restaurants, you can get half price, so up to a tenner off your meal for each person. So it's a pretty good deal, but I haven't been using it because I guess I work Monday to Wednesday and I would rather eat out at the weekends. I've been to restaurants like 10 times now, and it's been pretty calm and safe for me. I feel pretty comfortable, even though in one restaurant in London, the server was also not wearing a mask. I mean, I haven't seen any customers wearing masks, but apparently it's not compulsory for servers to wear masks. But it's fine, I still felt comfortable with it, even if maybe I'm a bit too comfortable. I've also been to the pub a couple of times during the day, and I don't know if I would feel comfortable going to the pub if I couldn't like socially distance and have like a clear table that's away from everyone else. Different places have different procedures for how you order food and drinks. So sometimes it'll be a server coming to you, sometimes you'll be going up to the counter and having some sort of orderly queue. I think that's the one that I'm the least comfortable with, because especially if people are getting a bit drunk, they're definitely not going to be social distancing, and I don't really trust people's hygiene and that they've washed their hands and stuff if they've been drinking. And then I've seen that some restaurants you can order on your phone, which I love as well, because it just minimizes as much social contact as possible. Although, of course, there is a case to say that we shouldn't be going to restaurants at all because it forces workers to work even if they would rather not. I'll be interested to hear your perspective on this because it's nuanced, you know, it really depends on the individual. But that, for me, that's what I'm comfortable with at the moment, at this point in mid-August. And part of me also feels like I need to make the most of it because, you know, we've had some really hot weather here. It's been sunny some days in the UK and it's a total possibility that the region that I live in could go into local lockdown, or like we could have a second wave national lockdown as people keep talking about this winter or whenever. And I kind of feel like if I didn't make the most of the opportunity to go out while keeping into consideration public health and social distancing measures, if I didn't take the opportunity now, it might be like a whole year that I don't go out. So that's sort of my mindset a little bit. So in case there is a second lockdown, I don't want to look back and regret and think, oh, I should have gone out and about while I could have, especially while the weather's pretty warm or mild. I don't know what it's going to be like in the winter. And I kind of anticipate that we really need to be looking after ourselves in terms of our mental well-being, because when it's dark and gloomy all the time and there's not as many sunlight hours, I think that could really affect people's mood and their mental health, especially if we go back into more isolation or go into we're already in a recession, aren't we? So a lot of people might be affected by financial instability. Wow, I don't want to make this depressing. I also went the weekend before last, I don't know whether this is a bit weird, I went axe throwing. So I saw that like more and more places in London are opening up, and it's a spot in London. It's a chain. They also have them in other cities where you can go axe throwing. So it's literally like, it's like bowling or playing darts. You literally throw a small axe and try and hit it onto the target, which is a massive slab of wood. Yeah, I've been before. I went for a work social maybe over a year ago and it was really, really fun. And that was good as well. There wasn't that many people there on a Saturday evening, even though they had discount, but I don't know whether that's because they just didn't have very many bookings because it was right at the start of August, or whether it was because they had limited the number of people who were allowed to be in that space at a time, who were allowed to play or make a booking at a certain time. Because yeah, there was loads of space, hand sanitizer everywhere, and we also had our temperature checked by one of those like zappy things where it just zaps your forehead, but it doesn't zap it doesn't hurt or anything, but you know, it reads the temperature. And I think my temperature was like 35 or 36, which he said was really low. I don't know what your normal forehead temperature is supposed to be, but I guess your body heat is supposed to be 37 degrees, but internal. But he said it was low, even though it was a really hot day. Yes, I want to hear from you. How much have you been out and about? Have you been living up, partying at your friends' houses? Or have you been, I don't know. I was supposed to be bridesmaid next month. That's next month already. Damn, I need to figure out what's going on with that. Right, I don't know what the situation with weddings is at the moment. Last I heard, it was like you're allowed to have 30 people, but you're not allowed to sing or something, because that's apparently like too dangerous because you're more likely to, you know, spit everywhere when you're singing and spread germs. But yeah, like 30 people, I don't know whether you're allowed to sit down and eat together. Well, it's just such a hard time for the like events industry, the venues. They must be going through such a tough time. I was really excited to be bridesmaid twice this year, and I think I'm going to do an episode about weddings next year because I'm hoping to be a really great bridesmaid and that it will completely engulf my life and I can put my all into it. And yeah, I just can't wait. I'll keep you updated with what happens with that. Oh, my trip to Zambia was supposed to be for a wedding as well. Oh my god, so how many Zoom pub quizzes and birthdays and celebrations have you, quote, attended? I bet a lot. Also, I attended a replacement bachelorette on Zoom, which was supposed to be in Italy back in May. That was amazing, and that was one of the first big events in lockdown. And also in July, I attended, for a different couple, a Zoom wedding. That's right, they did like a marriage blessing, and they did, oh my god, it was amazing. And I kind of wasn't really sure what to expect. I was like, oh, this is just going to be like a work meeting, right? I'm just going to be sat there kind of paying attention. But actually, it was super beautiful. They did proper like speeches from the parents, and they had so many people from different countries who probably wouldn't have all been able to be in the same room. And the bride and groom were beautiful, like just as dressed up as they would be for a face-to-face or church wedding. And yeah, it was phenomenal, like, and quite emotional as well. Not because we couldn't be together, but the beautiful things that they were saying in the speeches, I actually shed a tear. So it was phenomenal. Let me know if you've attended Zoom weddings, birthdays, bachelorettes, hendus, whatever. I really want to hear about them because I love a celebration, me. I love them. Yeah, so hit me up with what you have all been doing and how you feel about going out and about. I am open for people to be honest. I saw this article which said that we're basically in an age of ultimate lying, which means that so many people are lying. And I definitely see that even in myself. So over the last couple of months, I've seen a lot of, you know, social shaming, people judging each other, whether it's their friends or strangers in the street, because we are all thinking, oh, they shouldn't be going out and about, or they need to be careful because they live with someone who's vulnerable, or they should be wearing a mask. And we really don't know what is going through other people's head or why they're not wearing a mask. But I genuinely think the last thing that people need is other individuals judging them. But maybe that's how we enforce rules, by being judged. And I think I can fairly say that the majority of people, including myself, have not stuck to lockdown rules exactly. Whatever the rule was at the time, we didn't necessarily stick with people in our own household. We didn't necessarily stay 1 meter apart or not meet up with friends. I'm sure there's been times when we've all broken the rules a little bit. And it's just about being honest about it. And also, if you're making plans, like, be honest about it. I have a couple of birthday events coming up in a few weeks. And some people might feel comfortable to attend. Some people might feel comfortable to attend only if everyone's on the same page about social distancing. But I think it's really the case where we have to be honest about who we've been meeting up with, what we've been doing, because that increases the risk and changes the risk for other people. So they need to be able to make an educated decision about what they want to do as well. For me, like, a big thing was going to see my grandmom, who lives in central London. We went for a massive dim sum and we were really careful to, like, stay apart, because she's been very diligently staying by herself in her home, and it's not been easy. It's been really, really hard. And it's the same when we meet up with friends as well, even if I might not think that they're vulnerable for whatever reason, because we really don't know. Like, everyone has a different amount of stuff that they're okay with. And as long as we're honest and we can help other people make the decision, not to say that I haven't lied. Before, it was mandatory to wear masks in the shops. I had been to a shop and not had a mask, so I did lie about that. Shout out to my friends who I lied to and who are hearing this now for the first time. But I think that's a pretty minor thing, and hopefully they'll get over it. I wear masks in shops now. I heard another podcast say that you should plan, like, events in this social distancing time. Plan it like you would plan an orgy. Hear me out. So they said that you need to make sure that everyone's on the same boat with what they feel comfortable with. You know, are you keeping your masks on? Are you going to keep 2 or 1 meters apart? Are you going to be sharing food? Do you want to keep the lights off? Is everyone going to be naked at this event? I don't know. Oh my god, in terms of this is so bad. In terms of keeping masks on, I saw this hilarious article where people had sent in quotes and testimonials of having sex with a mask on. Oh my god. And one person says, I hooked up with this girl on Hinge, dating app, that I had been talking to before quarantine, blah blah blah. We hadn't discussed the mask beforehand, but when we arrived at my place, I took my mask off and noticed she was hesitant to remove hers. We realised it was for the best to leave the masks on. It was strange because we couldn't really engage in foreplay as it involves the mouth. Guys, this was on a Cosmopolitan website. You've got to check this out. There was quite a few testimonials and I could do a whole episode about it, but I won't, because I think we've been talking about sex quite enough. Okay. While I feel pretty okay going out and about more now, when I first started going out and about in July, I did feel a bit hesitant, not actually so much for, you know, germs, but more because I was worried about, like, the increased racism for people who are Chinese or look Chinese. And we spoke about this again back in episode 4, about how COVID-19 has really brought out the bigotry in a lot of people and just pure ignorance. And I'm not afraid to say the word racism, it is racism. So during coronavirus, hate crime towards East and Southeast Asians has increased threefold. And that's just the numbers that gets reported. There's a million different reasons why data is not accurate, and that includes underreporting, reports that don't get recorded, the police forces that don't record ethnicity when they have hate crimes reported. And there's so many different ways that ethnicity can get recorded. As we all know from completing government forms, they don't always have a clear box for, you know, East Asians or Southeast Asians or the subcategory countries. So I really suspect that the number could be double that, or if not even more. And even though a lot of things are back to normal now, I did have some real, like, hesitation about going out and about and wearing a mask. So cast your mind back to, you know, the start of the year or previous years. You would see like people of East Asian looking descent. Maybe they were Chinese, maybe they were Japanese, I don't know, like walking around in public wearing a mask. And it was always seen as a bit of a weird thing. Like, oh, are they sick? Why are they wearing a mask? Is the pollution in London that bad? And because coronavirus, we first heard it linked with China, and a lot of people blame China for it. They're even calling it Kung Flu or the China virus. And they're not jokes because they actually affect people. So since the start of the year, I've seen so many reports of people in other countries, but also in the UK, who have been attacked. And from what the attacker has said, they know that it's for their race and they know that it's linked to COVID-19. I understand that a lot of people are going through a hard time at the moment with stress and fear and anxiety and worry. And a lot of us have these feelings. But taking it out on people who you want to blame for this virus just because of their ethnicity, that shouldn't happen. I mean, I don't need to tell you listening to this. I don't need to tell you that. But yeah, I did have some hesitation because I felt like if I wore a mask and I was going out and about, people might just look at me and be like, oh, she definitely has coronavirus. She definitely has COVID. Her people brought it here. And I could just imagine, like, especially in my town, which is pretty Caucasian, it's pretty white, and there's not that many Chinese people here. I don't really know any East or Southeast Asian families, actually, but I just had this perception that people would look at me and think, like, Chinese girl wearing a mask, she must be sick. She is to blame, or her people are to blame. You people are to blame. I hate that phrase, you people. Obviously, I do wear a mask, and I would worry about getting coronavirus if I wasn't taking precautions, like washing my hands and wearing a mask, but it's... Okay, the best way I can put it is that I'm scared to not wear a mask because of COVID-19, but I'm scared to wear a mask because of the racists. And I think that's the best way that I can put it. And it's not easy. It's a bit shit, actually, because I shouldn't feel that way. This, and it's a bit ridiculous that, like I said, the first time I went on public transport in July, I, you know, put on a mask and I actually like put on a cap and sunglasses, and I was looking at myself from different angles in the mirror trying to tell if I could like hide the fact that I'm Chinese. Like, I was wearing sunglasses and a hat and a mask, but I think you could still tell that I was Asian. But I don't know, and I just felt a bit ridiculous because I was like, why am I thinking this? Why am I even trying to hide my ethnicity so I can stay safe or just avoid dirty looks and maybe the odd snide comment, which I really don't want, even if it's, you know, not as bad as it could be. I don't know whether this is something which other people have experienced or thought about. I would love to know, because I feel a bit weird in saying this, saying that, oh, I want to hide the fact that I'm Chinese so that they won't see, you know, Chinese person wearing a mask and think that I'm, I don't know, a virus carrier or whatever. Oh, I don't know. And it's hard because obviously I do want to still keep wearing a mask. I don't know where I'm going with this. And I really want to highlight that I'm having all of these thoughts, but I haven't experienced any overt racism that was clearly like any side comments, or I haven't really noticed people avoiding me on public transport, or, well, I mean, just because I don't notice it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But again, yeah, I don't notice it. I don't know anyone personally who has experienced that sort of racism or anything like COVID-19 related, or, you know, violence or hate crimes. But I've heard enough stories, not just from different news sources, but also from anecdotally things get passed around the community of, oh, so-and-so's Chinese friend has got this and that shouted at them. And I just want to avoid like putting myself in that situation, even though I shouldn't have to have fear of walking around looking Chinese. And I also want to be clear that this doesn't only affect people of Chinese descent. It also affects people from any East and Southeast Asian descent, actually, who could get mistaken for being Chinese, which happens more frequently than you would think, I'm sure. I know plenty of people who have told me that they're not of Chinese descent, but people assume that they are because that's like the only East Asian or quote Oriental look that they know. I think that's something to be conscious of. Maybe if you have people of East or Southeast Asian descent in your team and in your family. And I guess my big worry as well is that it might affect me, but I know that I can speak up and blend in more so. Like, I'll still avoid conflict, but I would speak up more so than maybe other people in my family. especially if English is not their first language. And I think that's where the real worry is. Like, there's been quite a few people who have been targeted. If you haven't heard these stories, I don't blame you, because maybe you've been deliberately avoiding them like I have. Like I've said before on this podcast, I've deliberately unfollowed Asian focused pages on Instagram because I don't want to see videos of people having abuse hurled at them and getting physically abused as well. So early this year, I remember this one distinctly. So his name was Lu Graham. He's of Chinese descent. I think he was Singaporean. And he got attacked in Camden in North London. Someone accused him of, quote, making us sick. And then more recently, there was a Chinese man in Glasgow who was a photographer, I think. And I have a quote here. Tommy Garken won. He says, "I have never felt less safe anywhere in the world as I did yesterday, in the very centre of the city that I love and that I call home. And then I was attacked." So he kind of sounds like he didn't feel safe before he was attacked. And I bet now he feels even less safe, because I certainly do, having read that, especially because it's his damn home. Like, he should be able to walk around and feel like he belongs there and isn't at risk of getting attacked. I also saw this crazy survey, which was about a whole raid of COVID-19 things, but I'll put the link below. It's the Ipsos one. I don't know if that's a word, but IPSOS. It says 1 in 7 people would avoid people of Chinese origin or appearance. The threat of COVID-19 could have a significant impact on the UK public's behaviour. And it also has other statistics about how many people would avoid travelling to other countries or other areas that might be affected, and that people would want to avoid large gatherings of people. And I understand that, okay, you want to avoid going abroad, you want to avoid areas where there's going to be loads of people, but you shouldn't avoid Chinese people or Chinese looking people. Like, 1 in 7 people would avoid people of Chinese origin or appearance. That is fucked up. And it's bad because these things don't always play out overtly, of someone coming up to you and yelling a slur or pouring boiling water on you or getting punched in the face or all the awful things that we've seen. But they do have an effect on Asians who live here in Britain, not just British Chinese people like myself, not just Chinese people like myself, but anyone who is based here in the UK or other countries as well. Like, it's a problem because it's going to affect how people see us, like whether they want to include us in the workplace, whether they make jokes at our expense, either to our face or behind our back. And it's going to continue. I think I've said this before, but even if COVID-19 magically disappeared in the air and we all went back to completely normal 2019 life, even if that happened, the racism to Chinese people would still be there, regardless of whether there's a risk of getting sick or not. The racism has always been there, and it's just increased. Or people have felt like they are validated to say what they always believed. Another one, and this is interesting, over 3/4 of the UK, so 77% of the UK public, believe that people will be less likely to travel to China. I don't really know what that means or whether that's fair. It's not great, isn't it? Like, China's such a big country, and just because coronavirus was associated with it right at the start, like, I don't know. It says, okay, you're less likely to travel to China, but I think what that really means is that they believe, that the UK public believes that people will avoid areas with loads of Chinese people. It's a problem. Okay, and then in May, a House of Commons committee heard hate crime against South and East Asian communities. I'm not sure if that's correct. South and East Asian communities. But it had, hate crime had increased by 21% during the coronavirus crisis. Okay, so I don't want to be super, super negative, because there are positives and there are new things that have happened, which you may already know about, but I'm going to tell you about them in case you haven't or you need a reminder. So there's a few things going on. One of the things is a crowdfunder for a non-profit. So there's a group of, it says, activists, artists, business professionals, students, researchers, journalists, nurses, and community representatives from a diverse range of East and Southeast Asian communities. So they are holding a crowdfunder to, they have a 3 points of what the organization will do. And I'm just going to read them because I don't want to misrepresent what they are doing, because I think it's all fabulous and totally worthwhile. So they want to, one, hold the government, institutions and media to account and assure it does its duty to protect victims of hate crime with the full force of the law. Love that. Who wouldn't want that? Number two, mobilise a coalition of organisations across the UK to campaign against hate towards East and Southeast Asians. We need that as well. And that's exactly why I'm talking about this on this podcast, to raise awareness about this hate, because it is happening. A lot of people don't know about it. And I kind of forgot that, actually. I forgot that I was in a bit of a, you know, Asian echo chamber with my social media feeds, with my friends, with the people that I would even talk to about this topic. And actually, you know what? I do need to make an effort to talk about these topics with people who are not someone who would have already heard about it, whether that's my friends who I'm their only Asian friend, or my friends who aren't on social media, or my friends who, I don't know, actually, there's no particular group. I think most people haven't heard about it, so we need to keep talking about it. Okay, and the third thing that the organisation will do is create a grassroots movement of people to address racism nationwide through citizen action, media engagement, education and activism. Also very important. And this is actually going to be the first organisation of its kind that deals with the racism for these groups. Think about that. Like, there's, you know, lots of great organisations that focus on racism and anti-racism and raising awareness for these topics, but this is the only one for this specific type of racism, and it's something that is increasing, so we really need to be supporting what will be the UK's first non-profit dedicated to addressing systematic racism faced by people of East and Southeast Asian heritage. Oh, it's got this crazy stat here. Don't want to throw too many numbers at you, but listen to this one. YouGov polling last month found 76% of Chinese people and 61% of other Asians in the UK have experienced someone saying a racial slur to them. This was published in July about a YouGov poll, which was in June, I think. So I'm going to pull one number out of that again. 76% of Chinese people have experienced someone saying a racial slur to them. 76%. That's most of the people that you will know of Chinese descent. We need to think about that, because racial slurs are, you know, someone saying a racial slur to your face. That's not the first step of someone who's racist. The first step of someone who's racist is having it, you know, thoughts or saying it behind your back or acting unconsciously in a racist manner without realizing it. Someone saying a racial slur is not beginner's level racism. Is that a term? But yeah, 76% of Chinese people have experienced someone saying a racial slur to them. Hands up if that's you. My hand's up right now in case you hadn't already assumed that. Okay, so going back on topic, End the Virus of Racism. That's the name of the campaign, the organisation, everything. You can find them on social media, and I'll put a link to the crowdfunder below. There's way more information on there and you can check them out. Definitely worth supporting. It says that funds will go to hiring a full-time campaigner and community organiser. Very important. Number two, establishing an online reporting system for incidents of hate crime. Oh my God, I can't believe we don't already have this already. Because if you don't have numbers, it's almost as like something doesn't exist, which is why I like to include stats in this. Number three, producing multilingual accessible education and training materials. Well, they have already started doing this, posting things in Chinese and Tagalog on their Instagram, and that's just the post that I've seen. So they're already doing what they are promising. And number four, organise local and national level campaign and advocacy events. So if you can, please consider giving to this crowdfunder. It's so important and something I care like so deeply about. And if it isn't something that has affected you, just like it isn't something that has really affected me beyond my thoughts of thinking, should I wear a mask, should I not wear a mask? Chinese, if I wear a mask, do I look like I could be blamed for the coronavirus? Whether it's affected you or not, please consider donating to this crowdfunder. If you can't donate, please share it. Share it with your network, share it far and wide, because as I said, we might assume that everyone in our circle knows about it, but they really, 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 really don't. And even if you know that your friends aren't in a place to give right now, they know people who know people who know people who are in a place to give. And it's something that's super crucial, and I hope you will consider donating, sharing where you can, or both. Right, next. So the other thing I also really want you to share, if you're messaging your friends already, then you know, include this link with it. It's a petition started by Viv Yao, the wonderful Viv Yao from But Where Are You From? She even has a catchy jingle. I've just heard so many variations of that very relatable question, but where are you from? Anyway, so Viv Yao is also a British Chinese podcaster who started a podcast just before mine. And I know that because she really inspired me to actually take that final step to properly start my podcast. So thank you to Viv for that, and thank you to Viv for starting this petition and generally being an all-round advocate. I should also shout out that she's part of a team in promoting this, and they have done a huge amount of work over the last month for a petition to stop media outlets using photos of East or Southeast Asian looking people in articles around COVID-19. Wait, I don't know if I explained that properly. So when you read news articles or you see a link to a Guardian article or whatever on social media or online, on their papers, anything, it's becoming more and more obvious that they particularly like to use pictures of people who look Chinese or are East or Southeast Asian. And this is a bit strange because sometimes that picture isn't really relevant or suitable to the article. Like they'll be writing about Blackburn or somewhere in the UK where the population of Chinese people is so low, like less than 1%, but they will use a picture of someone Chinese, and it's obviously, I don't know what ethnicity the person in the photo, and you know what, the person who chose the picture also does not really know the ethnicity of the person. People get mistaken for being Chinese whether they are or not. It's important to remember that this affects East and Southeast Asian communities. Right, so they sort of use these pictures, and I started seeing this earlier this year, particularly on some American news sources. So when they were talking about coronavirus, before COVID-19 had really spread around in the US like it has now, they would be talking about a case in Manhattan, but then they would use a picture of like a Chinese looking man in another part of New York, like not even in Manhattan, in Queens or something. Or even worse, they would be talking about New York, but then they would use a picture from the Hong Kong metro with Chinese people in it. And it's just a bit ridiculous, almost as if they're trying to associate coronavirus with COVID-19. And you might be thinking, is this really a big deal? Like, I don't really look at the pictures when I read these sort of news articles. It's just there to catch your attention or whatever. But that's the thing, it does catch your attention. You do look at it and you do think about it, and it gets into your head, and we start linking East and Southeast Asians with masks. We start associating them with being dangerous or coronavirus, you know, that big virus that we don't want. And we might start to blame them in the back of our head without even realizing it. Anyway, it's a problem. And I've seen more and more cases. Once you start noticing pictures of Chinese/other Asian people in these articles, you see it everywhere. You see it everywhere. And it's really obvious that this is not just some random picture that they chose of some, you know, generic British population, but it's deliberate, and it's really damaging, it's really hurtful. And yeah, there's a petition now to change it. So specifically, they're demanding the UK government and media outlets such as the BBC, The Guardian, to stop using photography depicting East and Southeast Asian related imagery when discussing COVID-19. It's damaging and hurtful for our communities and perpetuates the ideas that all East and Southeast Asians are coronavirus carriers. So please sign the petition. It's free. It takes 30 seconds. Please, it's the change.org link down below, and share it with a friend. Just copy and paste it. Copy and paste it. Share it with your friends and your enemies and your colleagues and your family, everyone. They already have, at this time of recording, 10,000 signatures, which is a real landmark. And I think normally you're supposed to have 10,000 signatures before something can get raised in Parliament, but it had already been raised in Parliament like way before that, with thanks to certain MPs who had, you know, supported it. And it's not just the case that they started a petition out of nowhere. They have been pushing for this and writing to these news sources and the journalists with nice emails explaining why this imagery is having a negative effect on our communities, because it does. It starts with imagery and then it ends with people getting physically hurt. And I saw that one of the journalists, when they wrote in, he was like, oh, it's a good thing actually, because don't you want Asian representation or something? What did he say? Oh no, he said it represents, you know, these Asian people in a good way because they are sticking to, you know, the recommended social distancing rules by wearing masks and stuff. Oh my god, it's just so ridiculous. Anyway, I care very, 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 very passionately about this, in case you can't tell. And yeah, please share it, because we need the community behind us. We need people of Asian descent behind this and coming together. That's how we have strength. We don't always have to agree on everything, but we do have strength when we come together, and we also desperately need allies. It's no good us pushing for change if we don't have allies who are pushing with us. I don't think any sort of change in the past has ever been made without allies coming on board. And that's the sad truth, but that's why whoever's listening to this, hello, help, sign the petition. Okay, thanks. If you aren't really familiar with this racism, like COVID-19 situation, I can really recommend that you... Okay, I am going to plug episode 4 again, episode 4 of this podcast. But also, I would really recommend that you check out Christy Koo's piece that she did on it. It's on another podcast. I'll put a link to it below. It's called Ascension. And it's something which was, I didn't really know what it was, but it's like spoken word / poetry, super beautiful, really, really touching, and evokes a lot of sort of relatable emotion for me, sort of like a level 10 version of the feelings that I've been experiencing and thinking about over the last couple of months around racism against someone who is Chinese or might get mistaken for being Chinese, and also sort of more recently with the COVID-19. I would really recommend that. It's like 15 minutes, so put it on after this podcast and listen to it, because it's, yeah, beautiful. That's all I can say. It's super beautiful. And I also have another poem from a Korean-Vietnamese-American poet called Calista Ockburn, and she has kindly sent me a voice recording so I can include it in this episode. It's from her book, This Is It, which brings to light the rising anti-Asian racism. So I am going to put a link to her website down below so you can check out this poem from her book. And, well, actually, no, you can check it out here because she's reading it out here. I don't know what I'm talking about. Basically, the point is there's lots of different ways that you can hear about the experiences of East and Southeast Asian people relating to racism or actually any topic. Our voices are out there, not just on this podcast, but also in others. And I really want to include this poetry as well, which is not a medium that I would normally gravitate towards, but I definitely think it is something that is perfect for evoking emotions and sharing these experiences in a super beautiful way. And I also had really positive comments after I included a poem about anti-racism from another Asian American poet in the very, very end of episode 4. If you ever need more information or resources about what the East and Southeast Asian communities are feeling, feel free to ask me. I'm not the center of the community, I'm not the leader of the community, but I am part of it. And if I don't have those resources, I can put it out there and ask, because I think it's really important to hear our voices. And if you're interested, I would love to be able to direct you to more resources. But again, I'll leave you with this poem from Calista Ockburn and then the next segment of the podcast.
An Asian poem is the first thing you run to during a pandemic, written by Calista Ockburn. If these words were to fill the void of the lost blood and frightened children, this poem are the souls of those who were too scared to speak up. Go back to where you came from cuts our throats, leaves us in an alley so dark. Where does the flashlight guide if we no longer want to go home? The world consumed us and threw us up on the ground with our bodies limp. Our souls soared into the sky and begged for the hands of others. Yet we were left there to die.
Okay, I have stopped talking about racism now, so I'm going into the next segment. Maybe this is like the third segment of this podcast episode. So at the start of lockdown, way at the start, I wrote a article / blog piece for an organization that I'm associated with about how to be kind to yourself in social distancing and everything. It never got published, but I still have it and I would like to revisit it now that lockdown is kind of ending, because I want to see what I had planned at the beginning of lockdown and how that's changed, and also whether there's good things that I've picked up along the way. This is the first line of my article, and I think it really shows how far we've come. So be kind to yourself. There is a lot of advice going on at the moment, including how to wash your hands, social distancing and self-isolating. A change in lifestyle comes with its challenges. Remember when we were making those changes? Remember that when there were those videos of showing you how long you should wash your hands and you should sing happy birthday twice, which no one ever does? Remember when everyone was frantically buying toilet paper and gym equipment and home office equipment and antibacterial wipes and everything was sold out. You couldn't get face masks anywhere. And massive shout out as well to all the Asian aunties, or actually anyone who we were making fun of for getting all the information from, you know, WeChat or WhatsApp groups, that sort of fake news, fake science that was being spread far and wide. Shout out to all of them, because even if it was fake, they were prepared. They might have been trying out sort of health related things which were never actually going to protect you or work, but they knew that this was serious way before I did, and credit to them for taking it seriously, because at the beginning I was still like thinking, oh, I'll only be in lockdown for, you know, a month, maybe 2 months max. How wrong I was. So my biggest change, even before the UK officially went into lockdown, although I don't know whether the government has ever used the word lockdown, because it's not a very nice term, because it makes it sound like we've done something wrong, like we're being locked away. Before the country even went into, you know, the strictest social distancing rules, I started working from home at the advice of Boris Johnson and my company. And the hardest thing that I found was not having structure to my day. So there was suddenly no real need to sort of wake up really early to go for my commute. And there was no real end to my working day as I went into the evening. And there was no real separation between work and the rest of my life. The first one out of the 10 tips for being kind to yourself that I put down on this list was set a routine. And I know that this is a good thing. I know that this is something which will benefit me greatly. That does not mean that I've done it. So it says here, keep busy and retain a sense of normality. If that means getting dressed out of your PJs, make sure you do it. I'm permanently in PJs now, so that's irrelevant. Oh, I definitely haven't done this. So I said, quote, what I'm doing, morning routine, including breakfast and planning my tasks for the day before I start working on my laptop. Well, that would have been a really, really great idea, but I didn't. And I actually think that something that's more important for me to be productive and make sure I have a productive day is to check in with myself and make sure that I am feeling good in other parts of my life before I start working. Because if I go into work mode when I'm already in a bad mood, I'm probably not going to have a very productive day. But if I've done a bit of time thinking about maybe I need to clear up my work environment or have a social chat with my colleagues before I start my work day, that means I could be far more productive, even if it does take that bit of time in the morning. And that's sort of a slightly different type of morning routine that I've had. Number two, retain social contact. You know what? I'm a very extroverted person, and I actually have friends checking in on me saying, oh, are you okay? It's such a big lifestyle change to go into lockdown, especially because you always had so many events. And I think it is important, just like how I've written here, just because we are physically distant doesn't mean we can't keep strong ties and connections. And it is true. Basically, everyone has now entered a long distance friendship with whoever they would normally have hung out with. And obviously I have kept in touch with lots of people through social media, too many Zoom calls to be honest. And in this article, something that I said that I was doing, which I actually truthfully was doing, unlike the first one with the morning routine, something that I truthfully was doing to retain social contact is to take this opportunity to not just connect to people that I normally would be meeting up with, but to connect with old friends that I had lost touch with, and also people who are in different time zones and far away. It's much more flexible now that I'm at home all the time, that I can keep in touch and check in and catch up with people who I wouldn't normally be speaking to or if we weren't in COVID-19 lockdown. I also say here, when I had this realization, it was amazing. I said, I am wary of how much time I spend looking at screens, so I like long evening phone calls. That's instead of Zoom calls. Like, I spend quite enough time looking at a screen, and I don't really want to see my face on the screen as well. And if I don't really want to see my friend's face, they shouldn't take offense. I just prefer to have long phone calls sometimes. And that means I can also go out on a nice walk. But retaining social contact has been really good. And I've also connected with a lot of new people since starting this podcast, which I did start during lockdown. Can you believe it? Because I can't. I definitely have retained social contact, but made new friends through, you know, podcast guests, listeners, other British Asian creatives, other podcasters, and I am so grateful for that. Like, I really hope that we will all still be friends after lockdown and we'll go back to our normal lives and our pre-COVID friends. Yeah, it's just been amazing and really beautiful, and I love that support network. I love giving support, I love motivating people, and I love, because I really see that sort of reflected back, so it doesn't feel like I'm doing it insincerely. But yeah, retain social contact, and that's definitely going to be important moving forwards, especially as I've sort of dropped off doing, you know, big evening Zoom quizzes and meetups and gatherings. Okay, number three. Oh my god, I do not do this. Get enough quality sleep. I do not do that. I stay up really late, especially now that I can wake up at 8:57 and be on a meeting at 9 o'clock. I've spoken about this before. I need to limit mindless scrolling on social media before bed and enforce a time to start winding down. So enforce the time to start winding down and get off social media before I want to go to sleep. And while, you know, it hasn't been too bad, it's been mostly okay. There was one night where I stayed up until 7 a.m. 7 a.m, why? And I had work the next day, so it was a school night. I basically did almost an all-nighter before work. And you know what? On that day, I actually recorded a podcast episode as well on no sleep and almost no sleep. And I think because I wasn't well rested, I was almost delirious and kind of hyper. So it kind of went the other way where I suddenly had loads of energy. I'll let you figure out which podcast episode that was. It could be one that's out already. It could be one that's out after this one. I'll let you try to figure out which episode I had barely any sleep for. Another thing with sleep is, remember that time in lockdown where everyone was having really, really weird dreams? And I thought it was just me, and then I started seeing an article or a tweet pop up here or there, and then suddenly it was everywhere that everyone was talking about these really vivid weird dreams that we had. And I don't really know why that is. If you know the psychology or whatever behind that, please let me know, because it's so fascinating. My suspicion is that we kind of all had cabin fever, even if we didn't really feel it, and we kind of all had very samey days where we saw the same people or didn't see anyone, and we were just in the same building in our homes all the time. And that meant that our brains would be overactive at night when we were sleeping, so we'd just have super vivid dreams. That's what I was thinking, but I don't know. Let me know what you think. Number four. Oh my god. And this one has really helped me. Give yourself a break from the news cycle. There is extensive news coverage about the outbreak, and things are changing so fast, we can feel obliged to keep up. Excessive exposure to media coverage can do more harm than good, so it's important to find a balance. And wow, I'm gonna give myself a round of applause, because this is actually something that I've done. Whoop whoop. Go me. Very proud of myself for achieving possibly only one of the 10 things that I set out to do. So I wrote as well, I cannot control what is happening in other countries or whether other people are practicing social distancing. But what I can control is how much media I take in from news and social media. I now limit where I get my news to a few designated points in a day. So rather than checking Twitter all the time and seeing what the government's saying and checking the numbers in other countries and every report, I just check like once or twice a day. And actually that's kind of gone down to once or twice a week, which is why I'm not 100% up to date on the government changes, which I guess I need to be careful of, because they seem to announce things like local lockdowns for certain UK cities, you know, with hours notice, when it really should be bigger than that. I haven't had any problems so far from switching off from the news cycle, and I've also completely avoided conversations where, you know, all that fake news, fake science is getting shared. I wrote sensationalised news or incorrect health information. Get yourself out of these conversations. It's important to correct people, of course, but you can't spend your whole life doing it if it drains you. And this one is definitely something I'm going to be aware of moving forward. Not that I always used to check the news, but I'm sure there's going to be a time in the future where there's going to be another crisis or something big, where I feel like I need to get constant updates and expose myself to every little thing that's happening. I'm sure there's going to be a time like that in the future, and I hope I can look back at this COVID-19 time and think, you know what, something that I learned from 2020 is to give myself a break from the news cycle. Also, when I had this realization and it started making me feel a lot better about life and just a lot less miserable in general, I thought I was like a fucking genius for having discovered that I could just turn off the news. But then I was visiting my elderly neighbors. Remember at the beginning of lockdown when there was a real community feel and everyone was checking in on their neighbors and elderly relatives and stuff? I kind of dropped off that, to be honest, because sometimes I'll just look and be like, shit, it's been a week since I spoke to them already, or it's been a month since I spoke to them already, especially when all the days are samey. at the start of lockdown, I was chatting to an elderly neighbour and she was saying, oh yeah, you can't listen to the news all the time. You have to turn it off from time to time. And I was like, wow, I have so much to learn from her lived experience, which I never would have realised before, because I honestly thought I had had some revelation. But actually, she and probably billions of other people have also discovered how much better you can feel if you turn off from the news. Okay, so that's a good one that I will be definitely doing moving forwards. Number 5, find joy in a hobby. Find an activity to keep yourself entertained amid the ongoing pandemic. It's a perfect time for pastimes that you enjoy or don't normally make time for. Remember, this is so true. At the start of lockdown, everyone started cooking and baking and crafting and everything, and I was definitely on that boat. I started painting, not started, but picked up painting again, which I never made time for. I feel like people were painting everything. People were painting watercolours. People were painting their living rooms. And I also tried embroidery, which actually my sister Lauren is fucking amazing at now. And I've been reading a lot more, which I appreciate. I think reading is one thing that really helps me to slow down my brain and not refreshing social media every 2 seconds. And in March, we celebrate International Women's Day. And I borrowed a bunch of books from that female author / equality / feminism genre, if that's a genre. And I still have those books because the libraries were closed for ages. So I've had the books for ages now, haven't finished them all, but I have been reading a lot more than I ever have, including books that I actually own that have been on my shelves from gifts for over a year. So super, super grateful for that. And shout out to everyone who started their anti-racism book club. Are you still doing that? I'm in 2 book clubs at the moment and they're not like anti-racism focused, but I'm so grateful for them. Just checking in. If you've dropped off your anti-racism book club, you could start it again. And if you want to invite me, I would be keen for that. Number 6 on my list of being kind to yourself while social distancing. Number 6, bring nature to you. I've never been so grateful for my fucking garden than this year. In an average year, I would probably step into my garden possibly like less than 5 times, just stepping into it. I'll probably sit in my garden maybe once a year. And I think that's just because I would be out and about during the week, and at the weekends I would feel like I've been out and about all week, but I wouldn't appreciate sitting in my beautiful garden. And I particularly appreciate, getting up out of my chair where I'm hunched over my laptop and just going out to a local park near me. There's actually a nature reserve around me, and I really appreciate having plants in the home as well now that I'm like sat at a desk most days. It's amazing. So these are the things that I have been appreciating a lot. I also said I use YouTube videos and a certain website which plays background noise to play rain and other natural sounds while I'm doing chores and working. It helps me to relax, and I love having that when I have to focus on something at work, like background noise. You can just search like YouTube like rain noises or YouTube tropical sounds, and it's really lush to listen to. And when I close my eyes, I can actually imagine that I'm outside. Just turn on the fan, pretend it's like a natural breeze going through your hair. Just close your eyes, listen to some nature sounds, super relaxing, and I find it brings me like real peace in the day, especially if I've been cooped up all the time. That's definitely something that I'm going to be carrying on moving forwards, both actually physically going outside and then 2, like having plants and background noises to make me feel like I'm outside and in nature. Similarly to going out and about, number 7 is stay active. I mean, who hasn't spoken about this? Like, I swear everyone was running at the start of lockdown, and then I guess that's because gyms were closed and a lot of gym equipment was selling out, plus not everyone has a good place to work out in their home. Then we started having they weren't mandatory, but the government said you can take 1 walk a day, and people started saying that it was a mandatory compulsory walk. It wasn't. But even though I don't walk about that much pre-COVID there were, some days a week where I would be going to different parts of London for a meeting or being at events where I'm like on my feet. And it is a big difference now because I don't walk anywhere, or I don't have to walk anywhere. I literally roll from my bed about 5 minutes before my morning meeting. I roll from my bed to the dining table or my sofa or wherever I'm working that day. And sometimes, especially when I'm busy and focused at work, like it'll get to like 3 p.m. before I realise I haven't gotten up to get a glass of water, more like a cup of water. Do your Asian families drink water out of a glass? Do any Chinese families drink water out of a glass when they could just use a mug? Because I always drink water out of a mug, even when it's not warm, like even when it's cold or like fresh out the tap, room temperature. Yeah, I'll be sat in my chair and I know that I'm thirsty, but I'm just like, oh, I just did this one more thing. And then I just finish this off and then I never go up and get some water. And I guess it's because the hours of the day are kind of samey, they kind of merge into one, and actually every day is kind of samey. But I do need to, again, back to number one, have some kind of routine, and that includes staying active, keeping moving. But yeah, I appreciate my garden so much, and the parks around me, which are never crowded. I'm so lucky, I know, to have like parks around me which are never crowded, even when it's like beautiful sunny hot weather. And so many parks in London are full of people, you know, picnicking and drinking and seeing their friends and exercising. And but sometimes they're busy to the point where it's difficult to social distance. And something that I really don't miss is that at the start of lockdown, where everyone, like every influencer, felt the need to go on Instagram Live to, you know, live stream their workout. It's okay, influencers, you don't need to have content all the time. Maybe if this was just me, I should just let people carry on with what they want to do. But I did not need to see 600 different types of workout from so many different people, especially those who are not normally posting about fitness or health or anything. Number 8, write your feelings in a journal. Ah, this one sounds really moist. Instead of going outside, we can take this opportunity to look inward. Journaling is a powerful way to reflect and release your thoughts. Oh, I sound so cringe even reading back my own words. If you haven't journaled before or you don't know where to start, that's fine. I started quite recently too, and you can just Google like journaling prompts for beginners, and yeah, just write. Like, it's for your eyes only, so you don't need to worry about making it perfect. And I tried to spend a few days just like reflecting on what I've done. And what really helps me is not trying to write a whole log of everything I did that day, because then I'm just more likely to not do it. I'm not wanting it to be perfect in terms of I want it to be beautifully written in terms of handwriting and also the way I write. I'm not worried about that, but I would worry about it being perfect as in perfectly remembered and making sure I caught all the details of the day that I wanted to remember. And that kind of put me off journaling, because I would always be like, oh, I don't have time right now to properly think about what I did today. But I do have time just to take a couple of minutes, literally a couple, to help me process my feelings, help me to feel more grateful. And it also helps me, again, because the days are so samey, it really helps me to review what I've been doing when all the repetitive days stuck at home start merging together and getting confused. And I actually have some journal questions here which are lockdown related, and I'm going to read them out and you can remember this part and write it down if that's something that you want to do. I can't remember where I got these from because I've just got them written down now. Just to read some of them out pretty briefly. Journal prompts for your pandemic needs. Describe your pre-pandemic life in 3 sentences. Talk about your emotions, your mood, your energy levels, your productivity levels. What made you happy? What did you enjoy doing? Who made me happy? What relationships enhanced my life? What are my priorities? What did I spend the most time on? What are my goals? What did I plan and desire to achieve? And what and whom did I not have time for? That's like your pre-pandemic life. And then you can basically effectively look at lockdown as a period of change and say, how have my priorities changed? How have my goals changed? And then plan for the future. So then you can write down, I want to spend more time on dot, dot, dot. I want to spend more time with so-and-so. I don't know if this is helpful for you at all, because I'm just saying it really quickly, but these are the sort of reflections that I've had, and it's really helped me. And I'm talking a little bit about it here, but my thoughts are sort of far beyond that in my journal. Back to the list, we're nearly at the end. Number nine is support your community. Being isolated at home does not mean a safe and happy environment for all. I'm very lucky that I can be, you know, productive and happy at home. And actually, it's been really great to be spending time with my family. That's not the case with everyone, maybe because they're self-isolated, maybe because they're isolated with people that they don't get on with or can't be their full selves with someone. So actually, it's really important to support your community. Then I talk about the NHS volunteer responders. Remember then that was a thing, or supporting a charity that you care about. And just to plug again for the petition and the crowdfunder, which I mentioned earlier in the episode, that's a great way for you to support your community. And I've always been really, really keen to volunteer. Actually, it's such a massive part of my day job is to motivate other people to volunteer as well. And what I've been doing is, what I've written here, which I agree with, is I regularly check in with those who live alone or in difficult home environments to offer my help or just to chat when they feel lonely. Small gestures mean a lot in a tough time, and if I can offer a helping hand, I will. And I think that was an important reflection for me earlier this year at the start of lockdown, because I moved fairly seamlessly into staying at home every day, surprisingly. And I'm really grateful that I can, yeah, have a home that I'm like safe and happy and productive in, because not everyone does. And I'm glad I realised that early in lockdown so that I could be supportive of other people around me who perhaps aren't as fortunate as me in terms of where they live or their living situation. Number 10, and a big phrase which I love, is be kind to yourself. This is the last in the list and ultimately covers sort of everything in the list as well. So be kind to yourself. And this is definitely a phrase, a rule, affirmation that I'm going to be keeping and trying to live by moving forwards. It says, with many events and parts of our normal routine cancelled, there is a pressure to use the new free time to be productive by learning a language, getting physically fitter, taking an online course, starting a side hustle, so on, or starting a podcast, which I did. I remember at the start of lockdown, again, when so many people were picking up different crafts and sharing everything that they were doing, or almost like flexing a little bit, like, oh, what a life, I'm just here, you know, baking my sourdough bread and making my own yeast or painting a watercolour flower. It was almost like a bit of a high-key, low-key, subtle flex. And something that I recognised quite early on, which I'm also grateful for, is you don't have to be productive to be worthy. I wrote here, we need to allow ourselves to sleep, rest, worry, grieve, and binge Netflix without feeling guilty. And I have definitely done that. I don't feel like I have to be productive at all this lockdown. Maybe that kind of says something about my personality. But then also, I had recorded 25, 30 podcast episodes. And yeah, this is the 16th episode, and I have that many episodes recorded with guests coming up soon. So I have been keeping busy, but I don't feel the pressure to stay productive. What I am feeling the pressure now is to meet up with friends, because now like lockdown's starting to lift and people are meeting up with each other. People are messaging me being like, hey, how are you? Do you want to do something? And I'm kind of like, no, I don't know. Am I a savage friend? Because I genuinely don't miss them, especially because we've been keeping in touch this whole time. I don't feel the need to meet up just for the sake of meeting up. I don't know. I'm still thinking about it, but I do sometimes find it difficult to say no. It was actually much easier before, because I could just say, no, the government says we have to stay at home, so we'll stay at home. Give me a WhatsApp call. But now it's no, it's because I don't want to, which is harder to say than no, I can't. But I'm getting better at saying no, so it's all right. Ooh, I have been talking for a really long time, and you'll be glad to know, or not glad to know, that this episode is coming to an end. So my last thing that I want to say is that focus on what you have done this lockdown rather than what you haven't done or what you should have done. And think about, when we're talking about our new normal, it is going to be new. It's not going to be going directly back into the life we had before, and that's a good thing. So we kind of get to rebuild our lives, but we can really think about, what from my life pre-pandemic do I want to keep? What parts of my life pre-pandemic do I, actually reflecting on it now, could get rid of? And for me, that's things like, things I really haven't missed, so not just my friends, but I haven't really missed eating out at restaurants, so maybe I need to start dialing that down. Love eating home-cooked food too, and I haven't really, okay, well, no one's missed their commute or going on public transport, but something I have really enjoyed that I didn't make time for before, reading, spending extra long time just hanging out with my sisters, not doing any sort of specific activity or day excursion, but just hanging out on the sofa. And I think if it hadn't been for the pandemic, there's so many things like that that I wouldn't have done. And I definitely want to make sure I hold on to those and incorporate them into my new future life, whatever our lives will look like, say, in the next year, because it's something that I really, really appreciate. And yeah, I did say that was the last thing I was going to say. So thank you so much for listening to this bumper episode. Again, sign the petition if you haven't already. Consider donating, or definitely share the crowdfunder. Just share it to your story. Just once, at least. It'll be great. And thank you again for joining me for an episode of Yellow Bee Pod. And if there's one thing I've learned from lockdown, is how long I can talk to myself for. Damn, I talked to myself for a long time. And that's something I've learned from this podcast and this lockdown. So happy 2020, everyone. 2020 is not over. While there's less than 20 weeks left in 2020. How many times can I say 20? There's less than 20 weeks left in 2020. But there's still time to do the things that you want to do, manifest it, make it happen, and drop me a message because I want to hear about your lockdown experiences and how you feel about the lockdown restrictions lifting now. So take care everyone, and I'll speak to you very soon. I gotta tell you, the next episode is one with a guest I'm very fortunate to have connected with, but it's also on a topic that I'm quite nervous to talk about because it is very important and I want to do it right. So gonna start working on it as soon as I put this episode out. A massive thank you again for listening. Subscribe, share, tell your friends at Yellow Bee Pod. Hit me up and speak to you very soon. Bye. Oh, it's your girl Natalie. Bye. I also need to record an outro. What do people say in outro? Do people even listen to outros? If you're still listening to this, drop a fish emoji. Well, I don't know why fish, but drop a fish emoji on whatever Instagram post is my latest. Okay, bye.